Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to the Great Loop Radio Show. This is Beth McHugh. We've given Steve and Janice the day off, so it's just going to be me and Roger. Say hello, Roger.
Good morning.
And our special guest is Captain Henry Marks, who has been with us before and discussed the Coast Guard requirements for things that you need on your boat. Today we're going to talk about the things that aren't required but are highly recommended. And welcome aboard, Henry. How are you?
Oh, good morning. Pretty good if it ever stops raining in New England.
Yeah. Okay, and if you have a question for Henry as the show goes on, please call into 877-497-1815. Okay, Henry, what's first on the list here?
Well, the first thing on the list, I think, would be a medical kit along with a first aid manual that you can read. Many first aid manuals are great for the doctor in the emergency room, but if you haven't been to medical school, you have a problem with it. We happen to like one that was written by a sailing doctor, Michael Jacobs, called Marine Medicine. But you want one that you're familiar with. You also, in conjunction with your medical kit, might want to take a Red Cross basic first aid course just to make sure you know what to do if somebody gets hurt.
Like, is there a big difference between, say, a first aid kit that you would have in your house or your office and a first aid kit that you would take on your boat, or are they pretty much filled with the same things?
They're very similar. I mean, we sell first aid kits that go from a little day pack, which is about a 6-inch square box, 3 inches thick, to a round-the-world kit that looks like a medium-sized suitcase. If you're sailing locally where you're 5-10 minutes away from the Coast Guard or Marine Police help, you don't need much. If you're halfway to Tahiti, you probably need a suture kit, tracheotomy kit, and all sorts of fun stuff, because any help you're going to get is going to be measured in days, not in minutes.
Right. Well, I think most of our members are sticking a little closer to home than Tahiti, but that's good.
But if they're going across the Gulf Stream, they could be a couple hours before anybody could get to them.
That's true. Yeah, that is a big chunk of water that you have to cover where you're not really that close to land at some point.
Going out to the Bahamas, and the Bahamian rescue service is pretty good, but it's still the Bahamas.
Okay. I used to live in Florida, and I think the distance from Miami to the Bahamas is pretty short, isn't it? And it's not like being in the middle of the Gulf.
Fort Lauderdale to Bimini is 60 miles approximately. But you have the Gulf Stream, which has a mind of its own. The weather can get fairly nasty out there if the wind comes out of the east or the northeast, and which, of course, will have an effect on anybody trying to assist you.
Uh-huh. Okay, well, let's move on to the issue of charts and cruising guides.
Okay, well, everybody today has a chart plotter. They're wonderful. I use one. They make it really simple. You push your finger on the touch screen, and it tells you how to get to where you put your finger. However, most vessels under 65 feet have electrical power that's not guaranteed, and if you lose electricity, remember, the screen's going to go black. You need to have backup paper charts. I always recommend that people carry a chart kit, chart book, for the area they're cruising to back up the electronic charts in case they go out. Also, sometimes the electric chart plotter picture isn't as clear as the paper chart, and if you're going into somewhere that's tight, you may want to be able to see something a little better. Along with the paper charts, you need a good cruising guide. Books like the Waterway Guide are great because they give you the marina. They just don't give you the marina advertisement. They give you the phone number, which is much more effective from your cell phone than the VHF radio usually. It gives you the approach depth, which is important. It's nice that they have 9 feet of water at the dock, but if it's a 2-foot sandbar across the entrance, you need to know about that too. I can't tell you not to carry the U.S. Coast Pilot, even though most people don't use it. The great thing about the Coast Pilot is that it gives you the navigation regulations. When you look at a chart, you will see numbers and notes, and they reference chapters and articles in the Coast Pilot, which will tell you that you can anchor in this area without flying an anchor light. This area is a quarantine anchorage. It'll give you the regulations, the security regulations, which these days, since 9/11, are considerably more detailed than they used to be. And you really want the current edition of Coast Pilot on the boat. Also, for those of you with electronic charts, remember, you bought the chart plotter 3 years ago and it came with a chart chip. The charts have changed in the last 3 years. You need to upgrade your chart chips every year or two. Okay?
What do you have to do, Henry, to get those updated?
CMAP, I believe, has a club CMAP where you can sign up and turn your old chips in and they'll send you new ones for a fee. The best thing to do if you're traveling would be to go to your local chandlery and buy a new chip. And I always recommend that you circle a date on the calendar. If you're living aboard, it's harder than if you're seasonally sailing. If you're seasonally boating every spring and March when you're getting boat ready to put in the water, you check the lights on the life jackets, you check the fire extinguishers, you check the chart chips, you make sure you get the updated charts or Coast Pilots. But if you're living on the boat, the calendar just keeps sliding around. So I always suggest you pick some period where you're laid up for a week normally, or it's your birthday or something, and then do all your maintenance then.
So even if you have those paper charts on board, it's also pretty important to actually know how to read them. So
yes,
maybe people should also consider taking a course in navigation and chart plotting and all that, just so they know what they're looking at and they don't get out there and have the electricity go out and look at the paper chart and not know what to do with it, basically. The part of having the charts there is also knowing how to read them, or they're not going to do you any good.
Two other items, one of which people do, one that they don't. You want a good pair of binoculars on the boat, but do not get binoculars unless they're stabilized over 7 power, because binoculars of more power than 7 power jiggle too much, and when the boat's rocking, trying to read a number on a buoy or see anything, all you're going to do is get seasick. You want 7x50s unless they're the techno-stabilized binoculars, which are admittedly $1,000 to $2,000 a copy. The other thing that nobody does anymore, you should have your compass adjusted. Have your compass swung and have a compass card that tells you that when you're going east, the compass is 2 degrees off, so that if you have to go in somewhere and you know that you have to steer 035, that when you're steering 035 on your compass, that's where you're really going. Chart plotters are a great assist today, but you really need an adjusted compass, and very few people adjust them.
Okay, well, that's good advice. Let's move on. We know that lots of times things go wrong on the boat, things break, and it's good to be able to fix a certain amount of things yourself. So what do you suggest people have in their toolbox if they need to repair something?
Well, the first thing you need is the shop manual and the parts manual for whatever engines you have on the boat, the main engines, the gen sets, and what have you. The shop manual, of course, enables you to troubleshoot the engine, but the parts manual is important for two things. If you break something, you can now order the part by the part number and get the part that you need. The other thing that you can do that it does is, which is very helpful, is it has an exploded diagram of the assembly that you're looking at. And if you take something apart, it's nice to know what order the nuts, washers, and things go back on, and the parts manual will give you that. As far as a toolbox, you want a good set of screwdrivers, a good set of pliers, wrenches, etc. I like a voltmeter. I like a stuffing box wrench for those of you that have stuffing boxes, because getting that thing off or tightening it up when the shaft is leaking can be a mess. Allen wrenches. One thing I keep in my toolbox is a camping saw, one of those saws that fold up in the handle. The reason for that is that when you get to New England, you're going to encounter something called lobster pots. And in the Chesapeake, you have crab pots. The lobster pots, they use polypropylene line, and when the line gets on your propeller, it melts into a solid block of plastic, and you can't cut it off. You have to saw it off. Camping saw with a lanyard on your wrist is a great thing for you to get under the water. Also, with the saw, you want to have a face mask. I am not big on these pony bottles of air unless you're a qualified scuba diver, because you can get the bends in 4 feet of water. Snake for the galley sink. Small mirror is great because you're going to lose something under the engine and you can find it that way. A box of miscellaneous fastenings. I have a little compartmented box with odd screws, bolts, nuts, washers, et cetera. A tube of 5200 for leak repairs. The engine spares, talk to your dealer about a cruising kit for your engine. They'll give you fan belts and impellers and filters are a minimum. You may want extra injectors or what have you. Each engine's a little different. But talk to the dealer for your make engine and get the proper spare kit for your trip. It's not in the toolbox, but a proper anchor with sufficient anchor chain on it is and anchor road is good. I carry 300 feet of road and 75 feet of chain on a 35-pound plow anchor for cruising a 40-foot boat in New England. Depending where you go, the anchor type may change, because in coral you need different kind of anchors than you need in mud.
Okay. Is there anyone who puts together a toolkit that you could just go out and buy, like a nautical toolkit of things that you would need a lot, or is it something that you really have to put together yourself just based on your boat and your
engine? I put it based on my boat and my personal experience, because, first of all, does your boat have metric or English bolts on it? There's no point in having a metric kit if you have English bolts or vice versa. The other thing is how advanced you want a hand drill. I like these battery operated power drills where you can charge them up and then use them. You don't have to run an extension cord up to the bow. Electric screwdriver, but put it together based on your own abilities and your own experience. You should know your boat. And my toolbox is a very active thing. It keeps growing. I drop tools overboard and I buy new tools all the time.
Oh, that's a good thing to think about. Is there anything that you could put on your tools so that if they fall overboard, they'll float and you can rescue them?
Not really.
No. Well, maybe somebody should come up with
that. You drop a power tool in the harbor, it's gone. It's the electrical device is shot. And how are you going to float a 2-pound hammer?
Yeah, I've seen a couple like wrenches and stuff that are floatable now, but nothing that.
And how easy are they to break?
Yeah, exactly.
I like Craftsman tools, because if they get rusty, you can take them back to Sears and they'll give you new ones.
That's right. Huh. And I'm just like you, Henry. I've lost so many things. I must have a toolkit itself down in the bilge of my boat.
Well, I've never delivered a boat that didn't leave a screwdriver, a pair of pliers under something.
That's right.
Okay. Is there anything else that you think people should carry?
Well, not in the maintenance department, because that is kind of individualized. But go around and look at the things that you're going to need to replace. I always like lots of duct tape, 5200. It doesn't hurt to have some odd pieces of wood. You never know when you need some shoring. But you have to look at the boat, the layout, and what is fixable. Okay.
Now let's move on to, this sounds scary, man overboard equipment. Can you give us your recommendations on that?
Sure. Sooner or later, somebody's going to fall off the boat. Try not to do it between the boat and the dock. The first thing you want, I like, is a heating line in the cockpit, in the pilot house, or up on the flybridge. This is a 75-foot floating line in a canvas bag, and if you're not moving and somebody falls overboard, you're moving slowly, you take this thing and throw the bag underhand to the person in the water, hang on to the other end, pull them back. Also, if they fall overboard and you come near them with the boat, you don't have to drive the boat up alongside of them. And remember, it's usually the most proficient sailor that falls off the boat, so now we have the amateur. Think of your mother-in-law driving the boat up to pick you up. You'd rather she stopped the boat 50 feet from you and threw you a line. They throw you the line and try to run over you with the propellers. A life sling is a very good device for sailboats as well as power and powerboats as well. Life sling is merely a horseshoe with a 125 feet of line on it. Somebody falls overboard, you throw the horseshoe over the stern, you drive around them, not to them, with the boat, like you were picking up a water skier. Have them, when they get to the life sling ring, stop the boat, let them get into it. They pull it around them, stop the boat, and reel them in, and then heist them aboard. Now, if the sea is flat, you can bring them up to the swim platform and haul them aboard. If it's rough, do not bring them near the swim platform. You'll get them hurt. What you want to do is bring them amidships. If you have a crane or a davit for putting the dinghy aboard, drop the hook from the davit down, hook it into the life sling line, and either crank, pull, or power, or lift them aboard. The life sling is a great idea. Emergency boarding ladder is a good thing. Again, that's basically a rope ladder, and there's a Plastimo makes one. It comes in a little bag, and what you do is you hang it over the side, and I have mine mounted so that I can reach it from the water if I fall overboard, and you pull a handle on it, and this rope ladder falls out, and you climb up the rope ladder. Inflatable life jackets, I think, are mandatory. If you're in a pilot house, you may not need to wear it, but if you're out on a foredeck or you're docking and you're leaning out over the boat, put your inflatable on. The life jacket should have a light in it. They come with a whistle and reflective tape. If you're going in any open water, out to the Bahamas, Gulf of Maine, Lake Michigan, you want a life raft. They come in everywhere from about $1,200 to $1,800 to about $8,000, depending on how big and how far you're going. With the life raft, you want a registered EPIRB for open water cruising. I will not go from Florida to the Bahamas without a life raft and an EPIRB on the boat. I like a life raft for the Gulf of Maine, Lake Michigan with a 50-degree water temperature. I really would like to get out of the water until help arrives and not be bobbing around in it. With the life raft, you have an abandoned ship bag, which is a bag of goodies. And at the rendezvous, I deploy a life raft in the swimming pool, and we go over the abandoned ship bag. But in it, you have flares, handheld radio with spare batteries, EPIRB. And then after that, it's polypropylene clothing, Xeroxes of your driver's license and your passport, credit cards because you need money when you get rescued, and food, drinking water, et cetera.
Okay, so the life raft isn't really for someone who fell overboard. That's really if you're in an emergency and you have to abandon your boat, you need the life raft.
Yes.
Okay.
Hey, Henry, I've got a question. On the life sling, do you just sell in the landfall the bag that it comes in? Because mine's kind of gotten weathered and beat up.
Yeah, we sell replacement bags because 3 to 5 years in the bag phase and the UV light eats them up. Yeah, we sell the replacement bags. We also sell a plastic box, which is the hard pack for the life sling. And I like the hard pack for power boats because you usually have a big aft cockpit, and you put this thing in a corner of the cockpit, and it's a plastic box to lean on instead of that bag.
Right.
Okay, now. I think I interrupted you you were talking about the life rafts.
A waterproof handheld VHF is good for everything because if somebody gets up on the bow in inclement weather, you can talk to them with that. You're not supposed to use them ashore when you go grocery shopping. I can't remember what you're supposed to get, but if somebody goes out in a tender, you put the VHF in the tender, and if for any reason your radio antenna gets broken, you've got an alternative way of seeking help and assistance. Another thing powerboats tend not to have are barometers. They all have clocks, but they don't have barometers. A barometer is a very useful tool, even in the house. All you care about is which way the barometer is going and how fast it's moving. If it's going up, the weather's going to get better. If it's going down, the weather's going to get worse. If it's going fast, it's going to happen soon. If it's going slow, it's going to happen later. You can actually track thunderstorms as you watch the barometer going down. And when it stops going down and starts to go up, the weather's going to get better.
Okay, this is probably a silly question, but say you're at the dock and your barometer is going down, but it's going down slowly. How do you know, like, which direction the weather might be coming from, or how
Like, weather
what,
in the
what
U.S.
distance
tends
is it?
To go west to east.
Okay.
I like the weather channels, and I even have on my telephone a weather map that you get from NOAA radar, and it shows you all the precipitation. It doesn't tell you much about wind on the one I have, but you can see the rain clouds coming on your telephone and watch the barometer, and when they've gone by, they've gone by. The old days when we were living at home, this is a farmer's trick. If you're tied to the dock and you don't, and the windows are open, when the curtains start to blow out, that means that the temperature, that the barometric pressure is dropping, and rain's coming. As soon as they start to blow in, the barometer's going up, and the storm's going as is past you.
Huh.
Doesn't work if you're on the way with a powerboat, but it does work if you're tied to the dock.
Yeah. Oh, okay. So I guess
While we're on, disaster preparation, be very, very sure that the TV sets and the lamps are all bolted down. Sailboats always have everything tied down because they tip all the time. But powerboats, you go aboard a powerboat, and they get these beautiful big lamps in the main salon. Well, the first time you roll the rail down, the guy knows where the lamp ended up. I actually had one powerboat where I had the refrigerator in the galley doing the Virginia reel around the galley. And I went back to see what was going on in the owner's stateroom, and the chest of drawers that was between the two bunks had jumped off its pedestal, done a complete circle, and landed halfway across the cabin. You need to secure this stuff. Same thing with your quarter deck. A lot of you have picnic tables. I call them picnic tables, round tables with some chairs around them, and they're great. You sit there, you have dinner at night, and what have you. Well, I used to deliver a big Viking down to Florida, and we had a day in Chesapeake Bay. I'm still trying to forget. It was blowing 50 before it was over. And I had, before we left the dock that morning, taken the table, tipped it upside down, and then taken off four chairs and stuck them over the table legs and tied the whole arrangement to the rail. Well, Mrs. didn't like this at all. I disturbed her quarter, and she insisted that I put the chairs back up and put the potted plant back on the table. We got hit with a blast going across the entrance of the Potomac River. This is the 60-foot Viking motor yacht. I laid her right on her side, and I heard a crash, and I thought, oh, my God. So I slapped somebody on the helm and went down to see what would happen, because the owner and his wife had been laying on a settee on what turned out to be the downhill side of the quarterdeck. When I got there, the table was on the settee. Never did find the potted plant, and the chairs were all over the place. Fortunately, they had gone below just before this happened. But you got to secure this. It's dangerous.
Yeah.
If you have small kids, car seat-wise, bring the car seat on the boat. Because you get up on a flybridge, you've got an extra captain's chair or a settee. Rig a kiddie seat. You can put them in it. They're used to sitting in for riding around the car. They're going to be under the Bimini or the Dodger, and they're going to be out of the sun. They're safe. They're normally there anyway, so they're not upset, and you can manage the boat if things go wrong.
Now, that's definitely a good tip, because those little guys can scoot around pretty quickly, and dangerous for them, and it's dangerous for you.
They have to, if they're below 13, according to the Coast Guard, they have to be wearing a life jacket. And we sell to the sailboat sailors a safety harness for the kids, which comes with a tether, which is a leash, effectively. And what you do is you can put them up on the flybridge, put them in their life jacket with a safety harness, and clip the safety harness on the rail. They can move 6 feet around the bridge, but they really can't go far. You can't lose them.
That's a good thing. You don't want to lose them.
No.
All righty. Well, it looks like we're sort of coming to the end of our 30 minutes. Is there any closing thoughts you'd like to share with us, or anything we forgot to cover?
Just a couple of things. You should take all the engine maintenance, first aid, and navigation classes you have time for. Most of your big engine dealers, like up here we have a place called Mack Boring in New Jersey. There's Hanson Engineering in Marblehead. And they will have an all-day seminar on various makes of diesel engines. And you get down there and they show you how the parts work. They have one in the classroom. And usually at the end of the day, they let you start it up and then bleed it. The Red Cross has a never-ending line of first aid courses. And if you're new to offshore passages, because I know I have upset people at Trawler Fest and at the Great Loop, where we'll be at Joe Wheeler, and it's dawned on them that they're about to run out of boating where there's land on both sides. And how do we get from Mobile to Fort Myers? And I said, well, I figure what the heading is, but you just take a straight course over. It's about a day and a half. It's a day and a half trip. Where do we anchor? Well, you don't anchor. You got to run overnight. You set the watches. Well, if you get to that part of the trip where you're not comfortable, there's a lot of people like the two, Captain Chris and Chris. I can't remember their last name.
Caldwell.
Again?
Chris and Elise Caldwell.
Yeah, Caldwell. They're available for hire. I know Patty Moore is available. Hire a captain to make that piece of the trip with you. Yeah, you're going to spend a few dollars, but if they're any good, and those particular people I've just recommended are good, they will basically make sure you don't get in trouble, but they'll show you how to do it, so then the next time you have a hit open water, you'll know what to do and won't need them. Have your regular crew and guests practice everything. When they come aboard, show them how to work the head, because I don't know if you rebuilt a marine head. Somebody stuffed something that didn't belong there. It's not a lot of fun to take it apart. I horrify my wife because I tell the guests when they come aboard, if you haven't eaten it and a small amount of toilet paper, don't put it in the head because you'll sink the boat. It's a little dramatization, but a filtered cigarette technically could sink a boat.
Yeah.
Show them where the safety equipment is. Show them how it works. Show them where the heaving line is. Show them where the life sling is. Show them how to at least stop the boat. Your life may depend on it.
Okay.
And I'm always here if anybody wants to call me, 203-487-0775, extension 13, with a question, and I will give you the best answer I have based on my experience. If I don't know, I'll either find out or tell you where to get the answer.
Okay, and would you like to give us the website address for Landfall as well?
Landfallnavigation.com.
Okay, well, that's easy.
Yeah.
All righty, well, thank you very much for being with us. And all of you listeners, if you're not already a member, if you'd like to become a member, please visit us at www.greatloop.org. And we'd be glad to have you aboard. And I guess that's it for today. Again, thanks a lot, Henry.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye.